So moving right along, there are no disclosures and for either Mike or myself. I'm Henry Taylor. I'm a deputy health officer in Maryland, a recovering academic. I still teach the case studies in primary health care course at Hopkins, and former state health officer and country doctor, a variety of things. And I'll let Mike introduce herself. She's a doctoral student at Public Health.
Hi, I'm Micah Schleif. I am a doctoral student at Hopkins and International Health Department, and grew up in rural West Virginia on a farm, and have worked for 5 years or so in Haiti, and I'm excited to be back in school.
So we're really pleased to be here. There's been all this talk about social determinants, and as Dr. Pappas and I were talking beforehand, in the 90s he actually sort of was introducing some of these ideas, and now it's catching on. It's a fad, it's a movement. So Micah, for her thesis at master's level, was really looking at, so what's going to happen? Where's it going? It's nice to have a movement, but is it just all up in the air? So we took a historical view, looking back at the whole movement on primary health care, starting with the Declaration of Alma Ata in 1978, and then really wanted to practice community engagement and turn it over to you to help continue this discussion of where we're going in the future. And our basic message is that we can make progress towards the social determinants of health if we pull together. Most importantly, if we let the communities pull us forward. As Gandhi said at one point, he had to interrupt someone who was interviewing him, saying, "Excuse me, there go my followers. I have to run and keep up." And I think that most of us who are interested in social determinants of health could take a message from Gandhi about how he really, it's really the people who are on the front line, the mothers in the middle of the night, the fathers working two or three jobs. Those are the ones who are really moving social determinants of health forward. So I guess I might have had a little disclosure. If this is a problem, APHA can come back. I'm Carl Taylor's son. Some people that means something. If it doesn't mean anything to you, don't worry. But he ended an article in 1976 saying, "Through your scientific genius, you have made the world a neighborhood." He didn't know about social media and all that other stuff that we can do now. "But you have as yet failed to employ your moral and spiritual genius to make it a brotherhood." And it wasn't Carl, it was Martin Luther King. So the core elements, as we interpret the Declaration of Alma Ata, really it articulated the vision of health for all. We think it really set the stage. It's a very inspiring document. There was a lot of momentum when it first came out, and there have been various interpretations. The one that was crafted by the Global Health Council Spirit of Alma Ata Caucus had these three components of equity, sustainability / multi-sectoral cooperation, and community empowerment. So we were trying to think of how do we take these sort of fluffy concepts in 35 years and condense it into 5 or 10 minutes, and I thought maybe a personal anecdote. So Carl, when he was chair of international health at Johns Hopkins, was brought in by Halfdan Mahler to draft some of the background documents for Alma Ata. And there was a lot of stories about that, but one day, just a year before he died, in 2009, we were going through some of his papers, and he pulled out what we call the Green Book, which is the actual statement, the joint declaration by UNICEF and WHO that had contained the core concepts. And out of the back of that Green Book fell this yellow sheet of paper. And he said, "Whoa, what's that?" And he started looking at it and reading, and he realized it was the notes that he had taken on the plane back from Alma Ata. And it was his primary source document for what he took away from Alma Ata. And he zeroed in, he was trained as an epidemiologist by John Gordon, and he zeroed in on this situation because you can imagine sitting to listen to 110-minute speeches by ministers of health. I mean, it's really inspiring stuff, right? So he was sitting there listening to all these, and he started to do an epidemiology of the speeches. And he noticed that everybody, a minister of health from the developed world, said, health for all, because that was the slogan for the whole movement, health for all. But he also noticed that the developing country ministers said, health for all. And that was really Hofstadmahler's goal, was to bring equity into the picture. So since Alma Ata, what happened to health equity? For the first 5 years, there was a lot of excitement. They anticipated all these promises of funding to build systems, infrastructure, training, move forward. And then there was, most people attribute it to a paper by Walsh and Warren. There became this dichotomy between selective primary health care and comprehensive primary health care, vertical and horizontal, and things started to fall apart. Hofstadmahler later on wrote a book chapter that he titled Health for All or Hell for All. So Micah, in thinking about her master's thesis, and a variety of us are like, you know, is the next discussion about health equity going to go the same way? Carl had written a paper in 1988 with Richard Jolly where they talked about the allegory in Greek mythology of beating on straw men that we create ourselves so we don't have to have actual real battles. And they framed the dichotomy of selective versus comprehensive primary health care as a false dichotomy. So skipping over the long and winding road from Alma Ata, it's interesting. We see the commission and their report, Closing the Gap in a Generation, as really this next evolution and outgrowth from Alma Ata in another iteration. And fortunately for us, as we're preparing the talk, the commission also cited that they had a historical trajectory that they traced to Alma Ata, so that was a nice validation. And I think because it is Micah's thesis and all, I'll let you pick up and carry on.
Thanks, Henry. Okay, so sort of moving to the current debates and sort of current events and moving forward, this is the conceptual framework that WHO has been using for social determinants of health. And the only thing I wanted to point out here is that what's sort of not being represented here is the community and sort of participation. It is discussed in the Closing the Gap, or the final report of the Commission on the Social Determinants of Health, but it doesn't really show up in sort of the work plan or the efforts and debates about how we're actually going to implement this and move forward. So basically, the elements that are outlined in the final report of the Commission on the Social Determinants of Health are looking at political will, governance, and equity, and sort of the creating an enabling environment for greater equity in health. And again, just to point out, what is missing is that what didn't sort of transfer from the vision for primary health care and equity at Alma Ata to the discussion that's going on now is the community participation, sort of a broader base for taking responsibility and also sort of being able to have a voice and participate in showing progress on these issues. And just to iterate that sort of equity is the common denominator. They were talking about equity, comparing the developed world and the developing world back in the 1970s for Alma Ata, and now the discussion around equity is about how do we close the gap, how do we decrease the disparities in any population from a global level down to working within communities to really disaggregate data and be able to show which populations might be lagging behind. And so social determinants of health, the good thing is that social determinants of health is much more than just the things that were talked about in the Closing the Gap final report. And I don't know how many of you got to hear Michael Marmot speak yesterday, but he gave a really inspiring opening speech for APHA, and he was very much talking about sort of empowerment and telling stories about how communities are using data and really stepping up and exploring issues of social determinants of health and equity within their own communities. So that was really inspiring, and it's great to kind of see that as we move forward and look into the future, that some of these things that we think are really important, looking at this from a historical perspective, are actually happening. So I'm going to hand back to Henry to talk a little bit about some philosophy.
This praxis between theory and practice is where it's at. But since time immemorial, it's this therapeutic relationship. So I'm moving out of the ethereal policy realm to work that has been done at the level of individual healers and people who are suffering. And it's been that therapeutic relationship. I commend, if anybody is interested, if you can read Jerome Frank, has a very compelling book in the 60s. And then most of the thinking and philosophy was explored by Martin Buber in 1923 in a book called I and Thou, which is very dense and challenging reading. But in that, Buber differentiated this I-Thou relationship from an I-it relationship. And you can go in all sorts of directions from that, but the notion is really the interplay of what's different between them. In an I-thou relationship, you're really seeing the humanness of another person. I-it becomes much more transactional, depersonalized, and doesn't really bring in that moral component. The general theory has been brought forward, and I would suggest there's an emerging new paradigm from Tom Inouye and Mary Catherine Beach and others called relationship-centered care. And they define four principles that we're known to each other, that we influence each other as human beings. And what my mother used to call human encounters are grounded in those moral values and those human rights which are fundamental to every human. And so it becomes very, very personal and direct, but it is also, we have an opportunity in social determinants to make it global. So in Carl's last paper, people may be familiar with the debate he had with Jim Grant about Gobi and sort of this whole vertical horizontal thing I alluded to. But in the paper of the straw man of primary care, and then the later one, Carl comes to say, you know, actually, Jim Grant would have the courage to change his priorities now, and they both really would have had the courage to change. So let me go back to the beginning. I think the take-home message that we're saying, and part of where the other speakers were gracious enough to sort of play with the schedule, because we really want to invite hearing these local voices, really pulling together. We're really in this together, and we're going to get some very specific examples of what's really real out there. And at the same time, I know all of you will be thinking about it in the macro level. So let me paraphrase Martin Luther King again. We made some edits. Now, actually, we played a little bit with the end of it where it says brotherhood and whether it's sisterhood or family or community, so you all can do that. And I'll turn back to Micah because we're wanting to invite you to participate in a larger discussion, and I think we're keeping within time close enough.
Great. So thanks, Henry. And so the exciting thing that we wanted to get to by the end of our time with all of you is that there are so many ways to kind of collaborate and build relationships and share information and everything these days. And before we get into sort of what we would like to invite and welcome you all to as next steps, we just wanted to say that WHO does actually have a forum for social determinants of health, which is it's a global forum, and it's there to sort of inform and share information with WHO, to share resources, and to be sort of a global platform to discuss social determinants of health. And we think that that's really very a wonderful thing, and we were actually, before we even knew this existed, we were thinking about more of a grassroots approach to the similar idea. So what we've done is we have set up what we call a community of practice, which is, it's a website, and it's basically a place where we invite all of you to sort of join us and to share your experiences and be able to connect directly with each other and build some relationships and realize that, you know, we're not working in a vacuum and that we are all interconnected. And I wanted to go back to Dr. Ken Newell's vision. He was one of the sort of visionaries and pulled together the case studies that informed Alma Ata. And in Health by the People, at the end, after all the case studies, he sort of says, you know, it's great that we have this global vision, and it's really important. And at the same time, the reason that this vision is built on case studies and on real projects is that we can't wait. And in fact, communities must not wait for sort of the government or a global entity or someone else to sort of step up and fix something for them. Their biggest power is sort of in realizing what they're already doing, how they can build on it, connecting with each other, and sort of creating what they'd like to see. And so we hope that this community of practice, which is, this is the website here, and there's a little story about sort of how Henry and I were discussing about this talk and what we'd like to see next, and sort of how we came up with this platform, which we hope that you all will join. And I just want to show you what, so here's the link to go there. If you type this in, it will take you straight there. And there is also a card at the back of the room, just a little piece of paper, which has just some contact information for us and the web link and everything. So we invite you to go there. You'll get a login screen like this. You have to put in an email address and sort of create a password for yourself, and then you will be able to log in and join us. And we really, really look forward to building some relationships with you and hearing what other trends you are already seeing, what you'd like to see in social determinants of health, and how we can build some relationships to move that forward. So thank you very much.
We haven't flipped the switch, so right now it's an email that it's set up to mail an email. We're going to flip the switch so you can just go to that site and join. Just if anybody's trying in this world of real-time communications, I knew that might happen. Thank you.
So, thank you.
Thank you, Henry and Micah.